You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good evening, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia, and welcome to the American Hour. And, of course, I'm joined at the top of the hour right now by our good friend Nick Taxia, calling in from Washington, D.C., the hub of the universe. Nick, how are you doing tonight?
Strange. It's been a strange day, but it's getting better.
Okay, good. I just want to let people know we're going to have a supporter of Ron Paul coming on at the second hour, just before the second hour, and it's Let Ron Paul Speak. That's a campaign to make sure that Ron Paul gets to speak at the convention, but it's also because he's got enough delegates that they feel that he still could take the nomination if the delegates were willing to nominate him. So, one of their beefs is that the Republican National Committee is not following their own bylaws and blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't know all the details. We're going to let them fill us in on it. So I think it'll be interesting. And they're working hard at this campaign. So he's going to be coming on in about 45 to 50 minutes. And in the meantime, we're going to be doing a show tonight on what the media isn't telling. Of course, we've got the Nick Taxia segment. Nick's going to join me as a sort of a co-host tonight. John Pear, who's going to be with us, he got asked to help a really good conservative and former naval officer, so you can't argue that, with a congressional campaign together tonight up in Ormond Beach. So John will be back with us tomorrow night. Now, tomorrow night's going to be sort of like a flash mob get-together. We don't know if we're going to be able to broadcast or not tomorrow night. When I say we don't know, it's because my future tomorrow is uncertain. If I'm around town, if I'm in the country, we will broadcast. So it's going to be kind of a last-minute thing. So just pay attention to Facebook and the website. I want to go through a couple quick administrative things here, and then we'll get on with the show. First of all, Gary Ivey. Look, we had Gary Ivey on some time ago, and I didn't think to look back and see when the show was. But you can go back to the archives and find the Gary Ivey show. But he wrote a book called Backlash, which is about an oil company that gets – the oil industry gets such heavy sanctions after an oil spill was caused by terrorism, eco-terrorism. Not only does a – now, this is fiction, okay? Don't anybody freak out here. You're like, oh, my gosh, when did this happen? Eco-terrorism destroys an oil platform, minor spill, and it's all contained because they did a great job. You know, they were prepared for it, but one of the oil rig workers got killed. And yet these typical libtard eco-terrorists are A-okay with that because, you know, it's the unjustified means. But very interesting how the government just rushes to, even it's bipartisan too, rushes to put sanctions, and when I say sanctions, raise the taxes on gasoline $2. And at this point in our country's history, that would bring the price of a gallon of gasoline up to $6 a gallon. And also, as part of that legislation, there's a cap on what oil companies can charge. So they can only pass on a dollar of the $2 increase in taxes. Now, if we go back to the FDR Great Depression time period, when FDR got the Congress to pass legislation that did price fixing, essentially, told corporations and manufacturers and even small businesses what they could and couldn't charge for various goods and services. Eventually, the Supreme Court ruled that to be unconstitutional. So in this case, I think there's some precedent that if the government were to try and do this, put caps on pricing of what a company can charge, that is purely unconstitutional. But in this scenario, it happens. And so the oil company takes an unprecedented move that nobody sees coming. Nobody sees coming. And I don't want to, you know, ruin the story for anybody, but go on to Amazon.com, look for Gary Ivey and Backlash. Very good story. I've been going through that. I had breezed through it quickly before he came on the show, but I'm now going through it page by page. It's a very well-written story, and it's got some really pertinent things to, you know, unconstitutional executive orders, on and on, what Congress is doing, and the sort of deluded stupidity of our U.S. senators and congressmen about what they are doing to us and why. And so there's some really good banter in congressional testimony. Sounds a little familiar to what you'd hear today. And he started this book 11 years ago. So this isn't just something, oh, because the BP oil spill, he did this. He started the book about 11 years ago, and it really spurred him on to get it finished after the BP oil spill. So he was able to capitalize on that as well, but it's a great book. Let's see, what else? Oh, if you're looking for the radio show, the American Hour radio show on iTunes, it's syndicated on iTunes. It's free to stream or download as you choose. But if you go to search in iTunes for the American Hour radio show, you really have to look for USA Talk Radio. USA Talk Radio, because it's actually the network that I put together, and we have various broadcasters on the USA Talk Radio network. What you're going to find there is Michael Cutler and myself. Our two shows are syndicated there, so you can get those iTunes if you like, or you can just go to the website, which is usaradionetwork.com. The easiest way to remember it, honestly, this is the easiest way for me, is just go to tomgarcia.com. It'll just direct you right to our page on the USA Radio Network. And you can click on archives and go find all of our shows. That's pretty much it administratively, so we may be doing a show tomorrow night. And the number of shows due in August would be somewhat limited because I may be traveling a lot during the month. We'll see how that goes. So we'll just play it by ear. September will be back to normal, where it'll be more normal, you know, probably Wednesday, Thursday every week. And let's see. That's about it for administrative stuff. I want to throw just a couple things out here, Nick, and get your opinion on this. Recently, Newsweek published a article or a cover of Romney saying, you know, is he too wimpy kind of a thing. Now, wasn't the media about a month ago trying to peg him as a bully for, you know, beating up on people in high school, and he's just a rich guy, he's just a big bully? Wasn't that your sense of about a month or so ago?
Well, then again, you get the running popular cultural narrative that bullies are really wimps in disguise. They're compensating for their their wimpiness by going out of their way to be aggressive towards others. So okay. Being a bully, you always see it in the go back to Christmas Story. You know, the bully that used to beat him up after school and everything, chase him home. Once he Ralphie came back at him, he turned into a big puss. So
I guess you could look at it that way. But I didn't really consider their evidence of him being a bully actually being a bully. But in any case, have you ever seen President Obama throw a baseball?
I have seen, if there's any, yes, I have. And I've seen him throw more than one punch at business owners, entrepreneurs, people who want to make something of themselves in this country, people who don't want to be dependent on government as least as possible. Yeah, I've seen him throw more than a mean right hook at those people. And yes, a few baseballs in the process.
Well, you know, I've seen him throw a baseball, and if you go to our Facebook page, the American Hour Radio Show page, you'll see a picture of him throwing a baseball, and it's hard to tell there, but when you actually see him in action, I have seen 10-year-old girls who are right-handed throw a meaner ball with their left hand. Not only does he look like a girl when he's throwing a ball, but he looks like a girl that's using the wrong hand to throw the ball. I have never seen anybody so awkward and dorky throwing a baseball. I mean, talk about the ultimate wimp and girly man, as Arnold would say, holy shimoli. So I just think if Newsweek really wants to be fair, you know, put a picture of Obama throwing a baseball out at one of the baseball games he's attended, and then you'll have your wimp and girly man right there, your photo. But that was one of the things that I saw in the news recently. And the other thing was, did you see that Obama, when he was talking at a campaign event about the Olympics and was talking about gymnasts, and he was trying to, you know, compliment them, but here's how he, I'm going to read to you how, this is how he always gets his name in there, okay, himself. It's always about him. Listen to how much he talks about himself. Let me just say, you know, I know how to run. And although I don't run as fast as these guys, I know how to swim. Although I don't swim as fast. These gymnasts, I don't understand what they're doing. I can't even walk on a balance beam. They're doing backflips. Then he goes on to say, and this is what got my attention, little itty-bitty young ladies. Unbelievable. That's what he referred to these gymnasts. Little itty-bitty young ladies. Now, is that the stupidest thing? I mean, it's not mean. It's not racist. It's not, but he just sounds like a total dork. Little itty-bitty young ladies. If I was one of those gymnasts, and Obama was actually there at the Olympics, I'd kick him in the nuts for saying something like that. But, you know, that was just me.
Well, based on, I mean, how do you know the nuts are there based on how he throws that baseball?
Well, you know? I guess I'd kick in the general direction and see if he hunches over. If he doesn't, then you go like, oops. Okay, now we know. We have evidence. But and then finally, if you go to the Facebook page, we'll be talking a little bit about the economy later on. But I've got a chart that I put up a few days back, the Reagan recovery versus the Obama recovery, and it's quite telling. I've gotten into discussions with libtards about, well, you know, Reagan this and Reagan that, and then they always like to throw up Bush. Yeah, what about Bush? And, hey, look, Bush inherited a recession from Clinton, okay? And that just kind of passed pretty damn quickly. One of the reasons it passed, we cut taxes, we did some other things, and we spent money. You know, it's funny how liberals say the way to get out of a recession is to spend money. And then they condemn Bush for squandering the Clinton surplus. Well, he had to, because Clinton handed him recovery. So he had to spend money, just like Obama, to get out of it. So I don't understand. There's a huge disconnect there. But anyways, if you go to our Facebook page, and definitely if you haven't clicked on the like button, click it. We're up over 3,000 likes now. And, of course, on Twitter, if you want to follow us on Twitter, the American Hour, just simply the American Hour, and we have got over 8,200 followers now. We're well on our way to 10,000. I think we'll be there in a couple weeks. So Twitter's doing quite well. We got a lot of followers, and I get lots of comments and mentions and direct messages every day from folks about some of these different subjects. So join on in. And so there, we've covered Facebook. We've covered Twitter. That's kind of everything that I wanted to talk about at the beginning. We've got a Danny online who I know why he's here, because we've got, again, a gentleman coming on a little bit later from the Ron Paul, a Ron Paul supporter. I won't say he's with the Ron Paul campaign, but they're trying to put together enough signatures via petition, as well as enough awareness with folks about the RNC convention and getting Ron Paul to be able to speak, as well as some other things. So we'll find out all about that. So Danny, hang in there. And he wants to listen to Ron Paul, but also he may have some, I mean, not Ron Paul, but a Ron Paul supporter, and he may have some questions for us as well. I, for the life of me, I can't remember the gentleman's name because I'd never spoken with him before, but I'm going to pull it up here in a second. But anyways, Nick, what's on your mind? What's going on, and what do you want to talk about tonight?
Well, Tom, just to let you know, right before I went on, I poured myself something I have not had in a very long time, and that is a dirty martini with caper juice instead of olive juice.
Uh-huh. And how is that?
It's very capery, very salty, very good for the arteries, as you know. I am celebrating, hopefully, the last month of building up my new site to launch in August. It is much larger. It looks a lot sharper. It will be a lot more inclusive, interactive, and it will be expanded to include, you know, commentary from real commentators like, you know, David Limbaugh, Mr. Giles, who, by the way, whose site my articles are now appearing on clashdaily.com. And it's just going to be bigger, sharper, better, and more interactive for the viewer. So,
cool.
Last month of building that, and also great month of July, unexpectedly. I didn't expect to do this well in July, but the site did very well in July. So I am celebrating. What is it? Do I have the floor?
You got it. It's all yours, my friend.
Okay. There was a Twitter feed yesterday called Rejected Olympic Games. Things that the International Olympic Committee thought about incorporating into the games, but they finally thought, you know, maybe this isn't a sport that's popular enough that every, you know, maybe not enough countries do it that we can actually make it an Olympic sport. Yeah, and kind of like David Letterman, I have a top 10 list of the sports that didn't make it. Okay, now, I don't have a drum roll. Damn it, I should have looked that up online. I could play a drum roll. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Are you ready, Tom?
I am ready. Let's go. And okay. I saw some of your tweets about this. They were hilarious.
Yes. Number one, synchronized waterboarding.
That was the one I saw that made me laugh. Yeah. Synchronized waterboarding.
That didn't. They thought about that, and they thought it might offend too many of our Muslim friends and jihadist friends. So they scrapped that one. Number two, sort of in the same vein, bobbing for burkas. It's kind of hard to pick up that that face erasing, identity erasing. Burqa with your teeth, and some of these third world countries, they don't even have teeth, so it might have, they decided to scrap that. Number three, life size cardboard cutout of Michael Bloomberg shooting competition. A lot of people would like to shoot at a cardboard cutout of Mayor Michael Bloomberg, but they couldn't keep people from bringing heavy artillery. They just wanted you to bring your rifle, and people kept showing up with bazookas, tanks, even a plane. Even okay. Number four, baby kitten shot put. You get a bunch of big guys around with kittens in their hands, just twirling around, just throwing them in. Just see how far you can throw those cute little kittens. Which country can be good at that? The Olympics tend to be a family friendly event. They decided to scrap that one. Number five. Pin the birth certificate on the president.
Obviously, which birth certificate?
There's
several of them out there.
Yeah, obviously they couldn't find the right one, and the president, he's a slippery sucker. You can't really ever pin it on him. Number six, the Chick-fil-A relay race. Runners had to hand Chick-fil-A sandwiches back and forth to each other. But that would have, that would offend too many people. Number seven, the 40th anniversary Israeli massacre reenactment event. An idea sponsored by Iran and Egypt, and considering how much the international community, as we know, just loves Israel nowadays, it almost got passed on. Almost got passed, but they shot it down eventually. The international STD transmission relay, whichever country's athletes leave the Olympics with the most amount of new sexually transmitted diseases wins. I think the U.S. could definitely be a top contender, as well as Uganda, the Congo, and probably Greece. Number nine, the Border Patrol agent target competition, courtesy of Eric Holder, decided to scrap that one. And number 10, World War III. Just plain old World War III. Just have that as a game. Just go over there and just blow the hell out of each other and just see who's left. So, yeah, that was my top 10 rejected Olympic games. And I don't know. Did you go to Chick-fil-A today, Dom?
No, I didn't. I didn't have time, but I would have loved to. I've been seeing all over the internet photos of massive lineups at Chick-fil-A, and I strongly support Chick-fil-A, and people need to get to Chick-fil-A and get some of that good food.
I did not. I was planning on it, and I could not get the Chick-fil-A today, which is, living down here in, Gay Central, DuPont Circle, Washington, D.C., I wouldn't want to go to a Chick-fil-A around here because they probably would have given you a nice, Visine-laced sandwich. get your Chick-fil-A with a nice Visine milkshake to go with that chicken. You eat it and then you're stuck on the toilet for the next 10 days. So I wouldn't want to go to one around here. And even so, I'm friends with gays down here. I know gays. And even so, they're like, listen, I'm not going to not go to Chick-fil-A just because the guy, the head of Chick-fil-A, what is his name? Damn it.
Yeah, I know you're talking about that. Well, first of all, he never said anything about gay marriage. They read that into his Christian value statements. He never actually said anything about gay marriage. in the interview that he did. This was all blown out of proportion by libtards, and you know, the gay community really wants to try and keep this these kind of issues in the forefront, so that we can try and make them mainstream.
Just like any minority group, usually the people who a minority group that is that feels like it has been, you know, given second class citizenship, that has been neglected, oppressed, you know, subjugated, etc. Usually people that rise to speak for it end up being like the worst among it. So just think about Sharpton when I say that. You know, the squeaky wheel always gets the oil, and the crap always floats, as they say. So in so many cases, people who supposedly represent these people are actually the worst among them.
Absolutely. No, yeah, I know. Well, obviously, in the airline business, I fly with a lot of gay flight attendants and some wonderful, wonderful people, you know, and it's great working with them. They're very, very professional, and that's, I'm just pointing out, I want to make a point that you're making is the spokesman for these folks in many cases, just like the spokesman for many other not organizations, but say movements, sometimes are the worst of the worst, and they really don't represent the group as well as they could.
No, they don't. And I had a friend, and pardon me, but I had a friend that said, just because, you know, the head of Chick-fil-A doesn't like dicks and gays, that's his personal opinion. But that's just not going to prevent me from going to go get Chick-fil-A. You know, they don't discriminate against who they give out, who they serve. You know,
no,
they
absolutely not.
Simply a damn opinion. And this is where liberals are coming from. People like my mayor, unfortunately, I have to say, hold on, wait a minute. I think a little bit of vomit just came up my throat, Tom. I'm sorry when I mentioned my mayor, Mayor Gray. Excuse me, Tom. Gray, you and Rahm Emanuel in Chicago, people who actually want to take legal action to prevent a private business from coming into and expanding in their city based on the personal opinion, that's when it just gets... You know, I don't think these people, they have one freedom-loving bone in their body. Because loving freedom takes maturity. You have to be mature. That means you have to have the, moral constitution to tolerate something that you don't like, i.e. a guy with opinion about gay marriage that you might not like. But no, they cannot stand that. You know, to these people, the fact that it has been opinions like this that have suppressed gays so much, and, you know, name your minority group, name your group. Any opinion that is not politically correct now has to be silenced, because as long as that opinion exists, then the chance for a relapse into those old oppressive days of yore can occur. So that opinion, in politically incorrect, has to be no way. Can't have it.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the chat room here, Flycatch mentioned that Heidi Harris did a live remote from Chick-fil-A today. That just got me thinking, maybe tomorrow what I should do if we end up broadcasting is go to a Chick-fil-A and do a live broadcast from Chick-fil-A and see who's there for dinner, you know, and talk with the folks and, you know, just see that we might just do that. So if I'm around, I'll put that out on Twitter and Facebook, and we'll do that. But this is interesting that you brought this up, because this was one of the things I wanted to talk about in my theme of what you're not going to get from the media. It's out there, but here is something that I went to a couple days ago. And, you know, Rahm Emanuel decided to jump on the bandwagon there, along with, I think, one of the aldermen in Chicago, and say that Chick-fil-A's values are not Chicago's values. Now, this is interesting, coming from a guy who worked for Bill Clinton, who never made a peep when his boss signed the Defense of Marriage Act into law. And it wasn't just that he was a staunch supporter of Barack Obama. He wasn't he his chief of staff? But Obama opposed gay marriage until just a couple months ago. And did he ever, you know, make a squawk or anything about that? Now all of a sudden he's totally pro-gay marriage after working for those two guys. But here's the kicker. You know, there's a lot of crime in Chicago right now. So Emanuel has welcomed in Farrakhan and his Nation of Islam to help fight crime. But let's take a look at Mr. Farrakhan and his position on gay marriage. Last May, Farrakhan told a group of followers that the increasing public acceptance of homosexuality is evidence of the work of the devil. The Quran says Satan has made evil fair-seeming to them. And I would agree with that statement, actually. He stood firmly against same-sex marriage, saying that sin is sin according to the standard of God. He chastised Christian, Jewish, and Muslim religious leaders for compromising on the issue, even saying that Muslims who condone homosexuality are enemies of Islam. He said that the Newsweek cover declaring President Obama the first gay president was a mockery, and he should be called the first president that sanctioned what the scriptures forbid. So here's the bottom line. Rahm Emanuel says that Chick-fil-A doesn't match up about, does not meet Chicago values. Just as, it's just not Chicago values. Here's my bottom line on this. Chicago values. This is what Chicago values are, according to Rahm Emanuel. It's okay to attack law-abiding Christians who are opposed to redefining marriage, and it's okay to welcome anti-Semitics who are also opposed to redefining marriage. How does that make any sense at all? It just goes to show not only the hypocrisy, but here's really the basis of the left. If it's abominable, if it's an abomination to mankind in the eyes of God, etc., embrace it. If it's constitutional, if it's Christian, if it's family-oriented, to them, that's an abomination. They are up where they should be down, and down, you know, up is down, down is up. Liptards are just such absolute hypocrites and just lie through their teeth all the time. So in Chicago, if you're a Christian, you're an abomination. But if you're an anti-Semitic, and but you hold the same values of those Christians, you are suddenly a hero.
I would just like to add, when Democrats like Rahm Emanuel and Barack Obama, they must be incredibly stupid because when did they realize, it must have been sometime over the last 2-3 years, that gays have money and they contribute to political campaigns and they have a lot of influence in the media. They gravitate to the arts. They're very energetic. When did they realize? They must have realized this recently, where I could have told you, you know, in the mid-90s when I was in high school and college, hey, you know what? Gays seem to pretty much have a lot of money. I know if you live in a gay neighborhood, your property taxes are through the roof. And they donate to they're politically active, and they gravitate to the arts. That means they gravitate to the media. Hence why they are overrepresented on television and in the movies and so forth. When did Barack Obama and Rahm Emanuel realize this?
Well, they realized this
just recently. When they need the money.
Recently.
When they need the money, Tom.
Right. Need the money and need the votes. Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they've alienated black pastors. There are more and more black pastors speaking out saying, you know what, we're not going to support you. We're going to tell our parishioners not to support you because this is wrong, and we're not going to tolerate it. So he's robbing Peter to pay Paul, and he'd probably get more money from the gay and lesbian community, but he's not going to get more votes, I can tell you that.
I know. You can be tolerant of something and not personally accept it. I belong to the Church of South Park, and South Park touched on this a few years ago, and they in their episode called "The Death Camp of Tolerance," you know, where the boys are sent to this out, you know, it's in black and white. They're sent to this like Auschwitz style concentration camp where the guards are. You must stay tolerant, you know. So to me, I can tolerate something, you know. In my view, personally, this is more of a libertarian view. If you read the Progressive, go to the About section. We're a conservative leaning but yet libertarian site, and I wouldn't pass a law to forbid gay marriage if they wouldn't pass a law forcing me to respect it or to recognize it on equal grounds with heterosexual marriage. I don't trust, Tom, the modern left in this country to uphold that end of the bargain. I don't trust them to uphold that.
Absolutely not.
No. I'm willing to hold up my end of the bargain. Would they be willing to hold up that end? No, I wouldn't trust them.
Absolutely
as far as I could throw them. Or those kittens that were, you know, or the kittens at the Olympics. The kittens shot
caught. Yeah. Well, listen, one of the other things that has been bugging me about the media, and, of course, pretty much everything about the media bugs me, but did you hear in the news anything about a armed citizen stopping a very serious stabbing in Salt Lake a few days ago?
Yes, I tweeted about that, yeah.
It was at a
grocery store.
Yeah, and you know, I haven't seen it anywhere, although I Googled today, and guess what? I found a link on MSNBC to that story, and I thought, and you know, on the Google link, you can read a little bit of the story, and it's like, wow, MSNBC put the story out? So I clicked on it to see what, you know, maybe there was some commentary or something like that. Guess what? Once I clicked on it, it was a broken link. So maybe MSNBC put it up momentarily, and they decided, nah, we don't want people to know about this, so they took it down. But in case you didn't hear about it, there was a man who went into a grocery store in Salt Lake and Salt Lake City and purchased a knife. So, you know, he was coherent. He went in, found a kitchen knife or, you know, a carving knife or some such thing, bought it, walked out into the area, you know, where you probably get the carts and people are kind of coming in through the, you know, automatic doors and everything, and started stabbing people as they started coming in. You know, whacked one guy, just stabbed somebody right in the stomach, gutted him. Then went over and hit somebody in the head, stabbed him in the head, and the person, you know, put their arms up, protect him, started stabbing him in the arms. About that time, a gentleman who was armed pulled out his gun and said, pulled out his gun and told him to drop the weapon or he'd shoot him. So the guy, not being a total idiot, dropped the weapon because he didn't want to be shot. That's the time a bunch of employees and patrons there jumped the guy. Hopefully they beat the crap out of him, but jumped him, subdued him, and the police came and took him away. So an armed citizen stopped what could have been very, very ugly. And thank goodness he did. Now, I have to say this. If I had been the armed citizen, I don't think I would have said, stop in the name of the law and drop your weapon. I think I would have just shot him, you know, and just asked questions later. Just shot him and say, hey, we're stabbing people. And I feared for my own life, and I shot him. I don't think he'd get any trouble for that. Some idiot like that is like, you think it's okay to stab people? Well, I think it's okay to shoot people, and I'm going to shoot you. But he didn't get shot, but he is in jail, and he'll probably spend a fair amount of time there. And, of course, he'll claim he's some kind of nutjob. Oh, I guess at the same time he yelled out something about, like, you killed my people. I don't know who his people were. None of the articles talk about who his people are, but you killed my people. You know, random customers killed his people. That's the kind of guy that just needs to be shot because I don't think he's really all there, and he won't really know if he's shot. And he can move on to another, you know, dimension, and we don't have to worry about him anymore. But in any case, that story you're not going to find in the mainstream media. I don't know what else. What else did you want to talk about? I got some other things, but I'll let you go. I'll let you go some more here, Nick, because I'm sure you got some other stuff to talk about.
Do you I remember right when the new year kicked. The new year started with a bang for one woman in Oklahoma who she asked. She, on New Year's Eve, some man was trying to break into her house, and she asked the 911 operator, if it's okay, can I shoot him? And it's Oklahoma. The 911 dispatcher's like, if you're armed and you have a gun, you do whatever you feel is necessary to protect yourself. The guy came into her house, she shot him, and saved the taxpayers a lot of money. Every time I hear about somebody taking down, you know, an intruder or some sort of criminal with their Second Amendment rights, I think, wow, just think of how much taxpayer money thank you. How much does that shotgun and those shells cost compared to how much it would be to process them in court, hold them in county jail, give them a lawyer, and pay for his meals every day once he is sentenced and all that, you know? And you can't get more bloodthirsty than me. I told Janine, I'm like, sweetie, if anyone ever breaks in here and I have to... Well, I live in Washington, D.C., so I can't. You can fill in the blank. I'm not just shooting him. We're going to cut him up and eat him for dinner just to make sure that he's dead, you know. And then go eat him in a Chick-fil-A, and then go drag him into a Chick-fil-A and eat him. Uh-huh. So on the Duh Progressive, DUHProgressive.com. By the way, did I mention that? I have a website. It's satirical in nature. It's like conservative libertarian. Yeah, it's called Duh Progressive, DUH Progressive. If you go there and go under commentary, as you know, Tom, The president and the first lady look at my blog, and they're big fans of it. And Michelle Obama wrote in after the shooting on the 20th of July in Colorado, the tragedy there. But she goes further than to blame it on guns, because you know the Obamas aren't big fans of guns or the Second Amendment. But Michelle Obama says we must ban projectiles altogether. DUHprogressive.com, go to the commentary section. There it is, Michelle Obama. How can we still, you know, guns didn't kill those people in Colorado, projectiles did. She wants to ban anything that can be made into a projectile, such as, she mentions, missiles, arrows, a jar full with a pig fetus in it, for example. If you put a pig fetus in a jar, Tom, a mason jar, glass jar, and hurl it, that can be a deadly weapon. She wants to prevent those. And
right.
She cites all these incidences going back to, you know, all the way to, like, Achilles. You know, gallant Greek warrior, what did he die of? A projectile in his ankle brought down Achilles. So, and just one quote from the article, then I'll move on, or I'll let you move on. Michelle Obama here, everybody. It is clear the havoc projectiles have inflicted upon It is clear the havoc projectiles have inflicted upon us throughout history. But do projectiles show any sign of slowing in their wrath? Stunningly, no. Their use keeps increasing, building ever more into a blood-soaked, airborne crescendo of chaos. Dear God, is it not this ultimate question abundantly clear? How can we continue living in a world with projectiles? We've got to stop projectiles, Tom. And the First Lady makes that clear.
Well, I think maybe she's onto something. If we could ban all, say, bullets, which are projectiles, people could keep their guns.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have to worry about it, you know, trying to round people up and collect their guns. We just have to stop bullets from being sold and manufactured.
Yeah.
I guess you could throw a gun. You know. You could actually throw a pistol. You could throw a pistol at somebody, so. Yeah, that's a projectile too.
Everything must be nailed down, and the road or the world paved in rubber to keep everyone safe.
Well, here in Florida, we're lucky because it's all sand, so there are no rocks, so there's no projectiles here.
Yeah, there are. There's Cuban
coconut.
And Haitian immigrants. They're kind of small people, aren't they? Usually, you could pick them up and throw them.
Yeah, you could. And coconuts, though. We do have coconuts, so we could throw those, too.
Yes. Yeah.
And I want to remind people, don't sit under a coconut tree looking at your iPad and reading a book, because those things drop off and they kill people every year.
They do. More people are killed by coconuts than lightning.
Yeah. It's better to stand out in a lightning storm with an umbrella than it is to sit under a coconut tree. Word to the wise, if you're new to Florida, watch out for that stuff. So, all right. I got an article that W.A. Beatty from American Thinker put out, and I want to just cover a couple of the highlights in it. U.S. Treasury Department Secretary Tim the Tax Cheat Geithner was testifying in Congress just on July 24th, just a few days ago. And here's what he had to say. The economy is not growing fast enough, and unemployment is very high. Those are his words. He works for Obama. Those are his words. Not growing fast enough. Not fast enough. I mean, what was it, 1.5% or 1.2% or something like that? It's down really low. Anyways, unemployment is very high. Now, just within a day of that, actually it was the day before, the president, speaking at a fundraiser, and when it comes to the president at fundraisers, you can call them friendly, gullible audiences, but he was speaking at a fundraiser about his economic policies. That the tax cheat Geithner just basically told us is not helping the economy and unemployment is very high. And here's what he said. We tried our plan and it worked. It worked? I guess the goal was high unemployment and a slow economy. If that's the goal, then it worked, but that's not what he was trying to say. He said, as proof that his economic policies have worked, he cited the automobile industry bailouts. I refuse to turn my back on a great industry and American workers. 3 years later, the auto industry has come roaring back. Well, let's take a look at how the auto industry is doing. First of all, he violated bankruptcy law in the bailout of General Motors and Chrysler by giving unsecured creditors ahead of the line in the form of the union versus secured creditors. That's never been done before. Let's see. Protected union pensioners while not protecting non-union pensioners. GM gave $1 billion to Delphi's union retirees, but Delphi's non-union retirees got nothing. They're all retirees from the same company, but only if you're a union guy do you get that retirement. Paying off Chrysler's unsecured union benefit trust fund instead of Chrysler's secured creditors. There we go. One tenet of bankruptcy law is that similarly situated creditors should receive similar treatment, but they didn't. So violation of the law, and of course, one of the few things the president is supposed to do is ensure that the laws are faithfully executed, and he didn't do that in case. So he's violated his oath once again. We, the taxpayer, are on the hook for Obama's roaring back auto industry. GM stock closed Monday, July 23rd, at $19 a share. The Monday close would leave us taxpayers with a loss of about $25 billion. How? Let's add it up. At Monday's price of our 500 million shares that we own as taxpayers, or 26.5% of GM, are worth $9.5 billion. When GM's share price was $33 and we, the taxpayer, bought it, that was what it was, $33. Now it's down to $19. So the price per share drop has been $7 billion. But Obama let GM keep $45 billion worth in past losses to write off future earnings, losses that are normally not carried forward in a bankruptcy. The book value of those losses was $18 billion, which let GM avoid paying any income tax on its so-called $7.6 billion profit. So they were able to write those losses off to offset having to pay any taxes. $18 billion losses book value plus $7 billion in stock price equals $25 billion. That's what we're on the tab for. We lost out on taxes that they should have paid but didn't pay because they skirted the bankruptcy laws. And then, of course, the stock is worth much less. For each 1 cent of movement in GM stock price, it translates into $5 million for the taxpayer. So isn't it sort of ironic that Obama should describe what Bush did and what Romney proposes as a top-down economic policy? Obama thinks that he knows better than the markets rather than letting the markets decide which products and services deserve to survive. How about the green energy industry? How many billions, tens and hundreds of billions, have we lost because of his shrewd business knowledge? Anyway, here are two of the five principles of top-down planning. Decision-making, number one. Approach in which the desired results or objectives are decided upon first, and then methods to achieve them are selected. Management, an approach in which a board decides what results are to be achieved and how, and passes the plan down the hierarchy or management levels. That sure sounds quite a bit like what Obama is doing and did with the auto industry, while at the same time dissing Bush-style top-down economic policy. Can anybody say the word hypocrite? So going back to that chart on our Facebook page, you want to see the absolute hypocrisy of a guy who says, we tried our plan and it worked. Go compare what Reagan did and did actually work to what Obama has done, and you will see that he's an abysmal failure. Okay, we've already talked about Chicago-style values. Boy, it's that the guy, Emanuel's creepy. You know, he was a ballerina at one time, and he put a dead fish in an envelope or box and sent it to somebody as sort of an intimidation thing. And the guy's just a creep.
Well, actually, I can relate to that one. I had a boss once back when I was just struggling out of college, and I was a bartender, and he fired me. It was actually down here in D.C. I commuted because I loved the area so much. Try living in it. but I didn't know that back then, so I commuted, and he fired me. What I viewed was unjustly. So I bought a big frozen fish from the Asian market down the street from my place, and a few months later I went back in and I went into the restroom and I stuck it in the air vent.
Man, that would make the nice place smell really nice, huh?
It was a big nice, like a carp type of thing. I don't know, it was at the Asian market, so who the heck knows what it was, so yeah.
It was probably already smelly at the Asian market before it had some time to, you know, whatever. So, well, okay, moving right along, you know, Mitt Romney called Jerusalem the capital of Israel, and that it always has been and always will be in terms of since Israel has been recognized as a state. Now, there's some issues with how we have dealt with that over the years, but he's basically saying that that's what he's going to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel if elected president. Now, before I get into what the Umbler administration had to say about that, I've got a little clip. We're going to go back in time to campaigning Senator Obama. We know that he's always said whatever it takes to get elected, and let's just have a little refresher here.
The Palestinians need a state that is contiguous and cohesive, and that allows them to prosper. But any agreement with the Palestinian people must preserve Israel's identity as a Jewish state with secure, recognized, defensible borders. And Jerusalem will remain the capital of Israel, and it must remain undivided.
Undivided and must remain the capital. Now, they've changed their position on that, and they say, well, no, it's up for grabs now, and we won't recognize Jerusalem as the capital. And they've said that, and when they're asked and pressed on it now, they said, well, you know, you've already heard our position on it. Well, we want to hear it again. Oh, we're not going to say it again. They refuse to even say the word Jerusalem. But backing up just a little bit, did you hear what he said, defensible borders? This is the president who said, and this again goes to show his lack of intellect, that we need to return to the 67 borders. Well, we have what Israel has right now is the 67 borders. After the 67 war and they took a bunch of land, that's what we have. Those are the 67 borders. What he really meant to say was we need to return to the 1949 borders. Those were the original borders. Those borders are significantly smaller than the land that is now recognized as Israel and is Israel, just like Texas is now part of the United States. It's not part of Mexico anymore. And if you go back to the 49 borders with, in this day and age and technologically advanced weapon systems and et cetera, it's indefensible. It's indefensible. So he called for defensible borders, and yet then he calls for indefensible borders. The guy says whatever it takes the time, and I don't think – some of the time he even knows what he's talking about because he doesn't know history, and he doesn't even know what he's talking about. We need to return to the 67 borders. Yeah, we're already there, Mr. Obama. Yeah, that's what we have now, the 67 borders. Jeez Louise, I don't know. He's quite incompetent, but the media will never jump on that stuff. So in any case, last week a spokesman for the State Department and, of course, the Obama administration said not only are we unwilling to say that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, or not only were they unwilling to say that, but they weren't prepared to acknowledge the western section of Jerusalem, which Israel conquered in the 48 war, which lies to the west of the armistice lines, was even Israel. And here's their statement. The Republican candidate is defying a position that has been held by previous administrations, both Democrat and Republican. So if Mr. Romney disagrees with that position, he's also disagreeing with the position that was taken by presidents like Bill Clinton and Ronald Reagan. Well, first of all, I want to say this. I disagree with a lot of positions of Bill Clinton. Just because he was president, he took a position, doesn't mean if I were running for president today, I'd go like, oh, well, Bill Clinton said that, so I guess we got to live with that forever. And Ronald Reagan, amnesty in 86, I was totally against that, and I'm still totally against that. So Reagan was wrong on that one, and afterwards he said it was a mistake. So there you have it. So just because a president stood for something, but here's what really underlies what's going on with these borders here. There was a resolution, and it was, I don't know that it was a UN back then, but it was sort of a, UN-like resolution that was put together that recommended, and this was before official recognition, we gave official recognition to Israel, recommended the creation of two states, one Arab and one Jewish, both of which excluded Jerusalem at the time. But that resolution was going to expire 10 years later, and it did. So because of that, the Arabs never agreed to it, although Israel did agree to it. Of course, Israel and the Arabs knew that by then there would be a lot more Jews living in Jerusalem. The key is this. Israel has exercised sovereignty over Western Jerusalem and all of Jerusalem since, well, Western Jerusalem since 48 and all of Jerusalem since 67. There's your 67 borders. From the perspective of all the recent administrations, then Jerusalem is not part of Israel until such a time as its status is negotiated. That's sort of like saying, you know what, Washington, D.C., because we've got some people that are claiming that it's not really belongs to the United States and, you know, it needs to be negotiated. And the rest of the world saying, yeah, until Washington, D.C. and its sovereignty is negotiated, we're not going to recognize it. And yet, for us in the United States of America, it's the capital and it's part of the United States of America. So just because the rest of the world says something is a bunch of crap. But the other part of it has to do with where we were willing to position our embassy in Jerusalem. So not to get too deep into this, but just to cap it off, all land lying to the east of a green line that was established in 67 that basically said, okay, you know, we'll let the Arabs live over in this part, et cetera, is not part of Israel until borders have been agreed upon. This is why the U.S. forbids settlement construction. So we forbid settlement construction to the east, the eastern portion of Jerusalem for Jews, but Arabs can settle there all they want. Well, but the borders haven't been, you know, it's totally inconsistent. It also doesn't seem to bother the State Department that, you know, we have a consulate in the eastern part of Jerusalem, and yet it's technically no man's land. So what's the answer there? Well, the bottom line is, the U.S. and past presidents have been inconsistent and incoherent on this issue, and Romney made a very coherent statement and will be much better off moving forward following his lead on this, unlike the president who just sits back and waffles and says, well, past presidents did this, so I guess you better do it too, huh? That's just stupidity. So moving right along, now when we're talking about borders, let's talk about the Immigration Service and our borders and our southern borders. And I've got a clip, it's a couple minutes long, from Chris Crane. He's the president of the ICE's union. You know, they're government union officials, our government union employees there in the Immigration Service, the Border Patrol agents, et cetera. And what his agents have been telling him about the so-called mandatory discretion. You know, the administration says, well, we can use judicial discretion on whether we, you know, detain or deport certain illegal immigrants, except it's not discretion when it's mandatory. They're telling their guys, you will not deport anybody. You will not arrest. You will not even question anybody that falls into these categories. So there is no discretion. So it's mandatory discretion. In other words, mandatory, that's an absolute violation of federal law. And once again, the president violates his oath of office. But here we go. Chris Crane from the ICE Union.
In his capacity as an immigration enforcement officer, he's worked in the criminal alien program for approximately 5 years and has also served as a member of the ICE Fugitive Operations Team. Prior to his service at ICE, Mr. Crane served for 11 years in the United States Marine Corps.
When I last testified before the subcommittee on July 25, 2011, I reported, among other things, that ICE enforcement removal officers and agents in the field alleged that unwritten directives from ICE headquarters had been issued nationwide ordering officers not to arrest aliens unless it was confirmed that the alien had received a prior conviction for a criminal offense. Aliens who could not be arrested included, but were not limited to, ICE fugitives who had been ordered deported by a federal immigration judge, as well as aliens who had illegally reentered the United States after deportation, a federal felony. ICE officers and agents also alleged that they were not permitted to arrest or even speak to confirmed or suspected illegal aliens encountered in the field during operations and were prohibited from running standard criminal records checks for wants and warrants. Chairman Smith
provided us with the opportunity
to bring officers forward as witnesses. We were also able to turn over several internal ICE documents, which appear to not only verify that these activities did in fact take place, but also named several senior-level ICE managers allegedly involved in issuing the directives nationwide. Second, I would like to address the impact and effectiveness of these types of orders. I have never heard of any law enforcement agency in the nation that prohibits its officers from even speaking to or interviewing individuals who are inside a house in which the officers are attempting to effect an arrest. From a law enforcement standpoint, what could be the possible benefit? The only purpose of an order such as this is to prevent officers from making arrests, which ICE leadership has allegedly stated is its goal. However, these directives not only prevent the arrest of non-criminal aliens, but also prevent the identification and arrest of very dangerous criminals, potentially individuals involved in terrorist activities. If not, it not only prevents officers from talking to and arresting persons who may be wanted for crimes, but also individuals who are being victimized and in need of assistance. Certainly, anyone can see that these practices are contrary to effective law enforcement practice and place the public at risk.
So we have a president and administration that's so desperate for votes, that they're willing to sacrifice our national security, the security of individuals, individual homeowners, people that are just, everybody in the country. in order to potentially have some future votes. And I think it's despicable, absolutely despicable, and it violates federal law. And here you've got ICE agents that are finally speaking up, saying what's really going on and what they're being told to do. This is not prosecutorial discretion. This is a violation of federal law and a rewriting of federal law. And just to give you an example of how extreme this is, now, you know what the libtards are referring to illegal aliens now. They're calling them dreamers. Have you heard that, Nick? They're dreamers now. They're just dreamers, and they're just dreaming about being, you know, legal here, and it's just, it's so dreamy. Have you heard that term yet?
I know that I'm dreaming of November 6th. That's what I'm dreaming about. Dreaming about
well,
election day. No, I haven't. No, I haven't.
Yeah, well,
and
go ahead.
My dad overstayed his visitor's visa in mid-70s. I believe it was 1975, if I have family lore correct. And he was illegal. Baltimore has a big Greek community, and he found himself a nice home there, living among the and working within the Greek community. And let me tell you something, dad or no dad, I don't give a rat's ass. That man, just like any of these folks, had no business being in this country without proper documentation and authorization. You know, so I have a personal connection with this, or not personal link to this issue, and it still does not affect my opinion one iota. You know,
yeah.
And I've mentioned this to a few of my liberal friends down here, and they're like, "Well, according to you, if it was up to you, your dad would have been kicked out, and he never would have met your mom, he never would have been born." To which I say, "You say that like it's a bad thing." Oh no. Especially under this president. Oh yeah. So yeah, and Tom, I do have a buddy who works for ICE, and man, he can tell you stories about what they're told to do and what in some cases they are allowed to do, but George Bush, Obama's predecessor, he wasn't I didn't like his stance on illegal immigration, you know, him with his comprehensive amnesty and all that. You know, George Bush could have shoved it right up the you-know-where, just like Obama can stick his policies in the you-know-where. I don't care. These pro-illegal people, I guess they think that they can go to any country. Let's say Indonesia. They think that they personally can go to, like, Indonesia, step off the plane, not declare themselves to any sort of authority, not declare themselves in any sort of legal or, really, let's get down to a tax-paying sense, and be like, okay, I'm here now, and this is my home, and nobody knows that I'm here, and nobody knows who I am. I just live here now. They think that they can go to any other country in the world and do that? Bull, you know what?
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you go to our Facebook page, I put up a picture in the last day or so, and it's got a really nice, American, I'll say it because I'm a Hispanic, gringo-looking family sitting in their little family SUV, and they're all waving out the window, the mom and dad and the two little kids. Says, "We're on our way to Mexico to vote in their elections and get free health care. If they ask to see our papers, we're going to sue. Want to come?" I mean, can you imagine somebody in our country saying that, "Hey, let's take a little road trip down to Mexico and vote in their next election and get some free health care while we're at it." I mean, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. So now here's an example of how just bad this administration has gotten with this stuff. I mean, where it's gone. This is courtesy of Jessica Vaughn from the Center for Immigration Studies. Criminal alien dreamer, there's that term, dreamer, assaults ICE agent, gets released on prosecutorial discretion. So here's the story. ICE Enforcement Agents Union is reporting an incident from earlier this week, and this is just so it would have been about a week and a half ago, that illustrates the perverse results of the Obama administration's dream decree and prosecutorial discretion. An illegal alien who is described as meeting the criteria for the president's dream amnesty, and in fact, all you have to do is just say, "I'm a dreamer," Soy un dreamer. Yo soy un dreamer. And they can't question you on it. They can't ask for documentation or anything else. And you could look like you're 60 years old, and we got to let them go. Here's what happened. He was involved in a domestic violence charge. So he beat up his wife or beat somebody up, and the police were called. He was arrested and thrown into jail. When ICE agents arrived at the jail for routine inmate screening, the 5'9", 245-pound, so he's definitely not starving, living on the streets, illegal alien attempted to escape and in the process assaulted and injured one of the ICE agents. According to the union statement, ICE managers ordered the criminal alien released, ICE managers now, not the ICE agents that showed up, released without charges, despite the escape attempt and assault on a federal agent. A felony, not to mention his illegal status. Meanwhile, before offering medical treatment to the injured, the agents were questioned by managers regarding possible disciplinary action for their efforts. The injured agent will be restricted from duty for 2 weeks due to his injuries. So this is where we're at. If you are – I'm going to start speaking in Spanish from now on when I violate the law. If I get caught speeding or something like that, I'm just going to go, yo soy un dreamer, yo soy un dreamer, and, you know – they're going to have to let me go, and they can't charge me with anything and do anything to me. They just got to let me go because that's what they're being told to do. Just let people go if they claim to be a so-called dreamer. I mean, this is just unbelievable. That alone right there. You know, I talk to my friends who have Hispanic heritage, and I tell them, is this what you want? Is this the kind of country you want to live in? And, of course, they say no. I honestly don't have any friends, even Democrats that are Hispanic heritage, that think this is good stuff. They are not in support of this. If anybody thinks that the majority of the Hispanic community, when they go out and do their little surveys and polls, opinion polls, that kind of stuff, oh, 57% of the Hispanics are going to vote for Obama. Yeah, 57% of illegal immigrants are going to vote for him. I even have spoken with some people that aren't here legally, and they're not going to vote for him because they don't want this country turned into what they escaped from. So with that said, we've got our guest here on the show, our Ron Paul supporter from the Let Ron Paul Speak organization, Drew Schottenheimer, and we're going to bring him on and ask him, you know, to talk to us about what the program's about. Drew, how are you doing tonight?
Good, Tom. Thanks for having me on here tonight.
Well, tell people where they can find out more information and what you are attempting to do.
Okay. First off, you can get more information on the website, letronpaulspeak.com. What's important here that I want people to understand is this isn't necessarily about supporting, backing, or voting for Ron Paul. This is about Ron Paul is technically supposed to be up for nomination to speak at the Republican National Convention. This has been confirmed by an RNC chairman. Thanks to Ben Swan from Fox 19 Cincinnati. So this is about taking a stand, all of us together as Americans, Republicans, Democrats. It doesn't matter what candidate you vote for, what candidate you prefer. So that's what we're trying to do here.
Okay.
And now, the website. Oh, go ahead.
So what? How is it you're going to achieve that? I mean, how is it that you're going to ensure that he has the right to speak?
Well, there's no guarantee because obviously there's no rules that state that a petition of any kind will have any sway for a presidential candidate to speak. So this is more along the lines of us showing the GOP together that we know that they're attempting to put onto us who they want. The rules state that any candidate that has a plurality of delegates in at least five states can put their name in for nomination. He has a minimum of six states.
Okay. So when you say can be put in for nomination to speak, now when they're nominated, how does that – do the delegates vote on it and then say, okay, yeah, we want him to speak or not, and then if they enough delegates say, yes, we want him to speak, then he gets a chance to speak? How does that work?
Each state has a process that they have to go towards for putting the candidate's name into the convention. But it has been ignored altogether, and as you see from the media – Romney is already the proclaimed candidate.
Yeah. Now, is there anybody that's filed any kind of a lawsuit on this?
There's a federal lawsuit that is ruling a week from today, But this is pertaining to the delegates. According to federal law, the delegates aren't to be bound to any one candidate, but as they speak, they can vote on conscience. Romney has made an attempt to, he sent out affidavits to the delegates and asking them to sign it. They had 3 days. If they didn't respond, they lost their position as a delegate. The affidavit was giving their assurance that they would vote for him at the convention.
Uh-huh. Okay. So where do you see as the next phase in this?
The next phase, obviously, we have to see the results of the lawsuit next week. And I want to give a special thanks to Richard Gilbert from Lawyers for Ron Paul. He's doing this for free at an attempt for a fair and just election. And he's also supporting this petition. From where we go from here starts next week when we see the results of the lawsuit. But as for
Ron,
now, we need people on this petition. We need numbers. Ron Paul asked for numbers in Tampa. He's having his own convention. Not everybody can go to Tampa. So what better way to go to Tampa than a petition for the people that can't be there?
Okay. Well, we got Danny on the phone here. I'm going to bring him online so he can tell you what his thoughts are. Let's see. Danny, go ahead and tell us what your feelings are on the subject.
My feelings are simple. Dr. Paul has devoted his life to trying to do the right thing, and we owe him 15 minutes. It's that simple. Let him speak for 15 minutes. And then vote who vote for who you want to nominate, whatever, but let the man speak. And if Romney denies him that, then that's a sad thing.
Absolutely.
as a Republican, Romney should be glad that the youth is so involved in what's going on right now, the movement. So he should be glad to speak alongside Dr. Paul, who has served us for 30 years. We're not asking here for anybody to vote for him. We're asking to give him his 15 minutes that he already rightfully deserves.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. I got the impression, a lot of people got the impression during the primary that Ron Paul was sort of a in cahoots with Romney, or at least, somewhat of a supporter at that point. I mean, he was running his campaign, he was fighting hard, but it seemed like he never was willing to go after Romney. And I'd be surprised that Romney wouldn't give him, some time to speak. Has the Romney campaign made any mention about this at all?
Not to my knowledge. I've seen nothing about mention of Dr. Paul being in the convention or anything like that.
Okay, and remind us, when is the convention, the date of the convention?
The convention starts on August 27th, and it goes through the 29th. Ron Paul's rally is on Sunday the 26th. And then, of course, you have Paul Fest, which is the 24th through the 26th.
All right. We got a bunch of callers. A lot of people are just listening. They're calling in and listening. Nick, do you have any questions while I go screen one of these calls?
No, but I was at a Romney event a few weeks ago, and it was for a younger, the young professionals for Romney. And there was a huge libertarian sentiment there. They're going to vote for Romney. They support him, but in their hearts, if Ron Paul had a snowball's chance of winning, they would break Ron Paul, and probably so would I. There's a big libertarian streak now in the younger Republican crowd, unlike the young Democrats and their anti-free speech ways, but we talked on that last hour, Tom. Anyway, that's just my take on it.
All right, well,
he should speak.
Yeah, go ahead.
I believe I'm 100%. I see what he's saying there, but I believe that if Romney made some sort of attempt, stuck his hand out to Paul for the convention, and they spoke together, and maybe he would try and I'm not saying he's going to go, you know, pure libertarian, but he's not even making an attempt to make any type of agreement on our side. So if he would, you know, make that reach out, I think he might be able to pull a lot of people over. But he's not making any sort of attempt.
Yeah, okay. Well, hey, listen, we've got an actual Ron Paul delegate on the phone from Kansas City. Let's bring her on and see what her thoughts are. From Kansas City.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, tell me your name again.
Amanda.
Amanda, all right, go ahead, Amanda.
I just want to say, you know, I mean, for all the delegates at the county, the state, the congressional district level, even going to Tampa, you know, it ought to irk you on both sides, no matter who you support, the fact that the GOP party is willing to go through all these lengths to literally steal an election. And that's why I'm really glad this petition was started and that Richard Gilbert and the lawyer Sir Ron Paul are standing up, because, you know, it's not about trying to get a candidate in the seat. You know, you tell us as you know, citizens of the United States of America, if you don't like the system, get in there and change it. Well, we're trying to change it, and they're trying to steal it from us. So it's really a call to arms. I mean, you know, it's right now it's kind of the time as to where we unite and say, you know, we're going to stand for the rules being followed, and it doesn't matter who you like, you know, just follow your own rules, or really, you know, saying we'll take another 4 years of whoever and just, oh, well, we tried, you know. Are we gonna try and see that they follow their own rules or just try and fail, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm not a huge fan of the GOP. I've been a Republican my whole life and voted that way, but the establishment absolutely irks me, and this is just another, you know, I guess obvious ploy by the establishment rhinos that I dislike so much to just have their way, and it, you know, they're not going to follow the rules. We had a big scandal here in Florida with the Republican Executive Committee, and a guy went to jail. The chairman went to jail for the kind of stuff that was going on. And I understand, you know, this is not just politics, but there can be some corruption in there. I don't know enough about the issue to speak on any more than that, other than I'm just not a huge fan of the GOP. I'm a huge fan of conservatism and the Constitution. And I have to say, I love Ron Paul when he talks about the Constitution. I did see a funny cartoon once, I don't know, a few months back, where Ron Paul was saying something about a bill that he had just introduced. He said, well, I had to vote no on my own bill because it's not constitutional. He's such a strict constitutionalist, and after writing the bill, he realized maybe it wasn't quite complying with the Constitution, so he voted no on his own bill. But in any case, I love that aspect about him.
Can I interject something?
Go right ahead, Nick.
Yeah, one of my articles. It was one of my most hotly contested. It pissed off everybody. Really, Ron Paul declared his own campaign unconstitutional.
Oh, you know what? That's,
you know,
that's what it was. See, I'm stealing from you, Nick. I'm stealing your material. That's what it was.
Okay, all right, yeah. But he's like, listen, I read the Constitution. Nowhere in it does it say I have to run for president. I'm sorry, everybody. I gotta quit.
That's funny. Okay. Well, anyway, Drew, what else? Anything else we should talk about here about this petition? Tell us again where people can go to sign it, and what are they actually doing when they sign it? Are they committing now to have to vote for Ron Paul, or what is it? What's the real deal here?
Okay, so you can go to www.letronpaulspeak.com. The information is on there. It links to a petition that you can sign. I did make sure that it is required to put your address and your name, email, because all that kind of stuff holds weight on a petition. If I turn in a bunch of names, how are they going to know that I didn't just put it together myself? So this petition is not stating that you are backing, supporting, or voting for Ron Paul. It's specifically saying that he earned his right to speak, and that you want to come together with other Americans and have a voice.
So it sounds to me like you could be a Romney supporter, you could be a Gingrich supporter, a Santorum supporter. Just let Ron Paul speak. Don't let the RNC bully him into not speaking. And that's all they're doing when they sign that petition. Am I right?
Correct. That is 100% correct. I've actually sat face to face with a couple of Romney people, explained it to them. They're in 100% agreement. One of them totally does not like Ron Paul. But as I explained it to them, I was able to show them, you know, Ben Swan's story from Fox 19. I'm not just making stuff up. They were in 100% agreement. Yes, you should be allowed to speak. It's 15 minutes. He earned
it.
Yeah. If you don't speak up, what if next time the candidate you want's on the other side of the fence?
Mm-hmm.
You got to speak up now.
Exactly. Well, listen, do you have a Facebook page as well so the people can go and discuss this?
No, I had a problem setting up a Facebook page. It didn't want to let me use the name Ron Paul because I was trying to set up a fan page, and it was all weird. I'm not really in with the Facebook thing. I never have been, so I'm not sure if I was doing that wrong or not. Right now I'm managing, you know, the Twitter and the website. We also need volunteers. We need volunteers badly. We only have a small group right now. I'm sleeping about 2 hours a day. Spend a lot of time, money, and effort into this thing. And we need people helping out, whoever can, whatever they can do. Anything big or small, it doesn't matter. Any little bit of help, there's a volunteer page on the website. You can read what we're asking for. There's no donations, anything like that. It's just little things that you can contribute.
Okay. All right. Well, it sounds pretty easy. And if they go to the website, they can contact you there and get a hold of you?
Yes. There's a number on there you can call, email, GChat. You can reach me on Twitter. It's @LetRonPaulSpeak. So there's many ways you can get a hold of me and also some of the other people that are involved in this. I also want to make it known that if you have any questions, and also I'd like to thank Richard Gilbert. You can reach him at his Twitter, which is @USA_FreePress, or underscore press. So let me say it again, @USA_Free_Press.
Okay. All right, Drew. Well, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it. And good luck with that. Let us know. You got my Twitter account, my email. Let us know how things are going. And we'll talk about it on the next show, or any updates you send me, we'll talk about it and let people know. I've got a lot of friends that were Ron Paul supporters that are, you know, very active in Central Florida, and I'll keep putting the word out. So appreciate you calling in tonight, and good luck.
I appreciate you having me, and thanks a lot.
All right. Take care, Drew.
You too.
All right. Nick, it's me and you. Any last words before we blast on out of here?
I just signed the petition, and I just retweeted Drew's "I am listening to the American Hour with at TomGarcia.com. Hope you are too. I just retweeted that. My Twitter account is @duh_DUH_progressive. That is my Twitter account, @duh_progressive. And I don't know. We got next. I am going through the wonderful business of uploading material to my new developing website, which I have to upload myself for complicated reasons. But trust me, I'd rather be butting out my own toenails. So
yeah. I know how that goes.
Yeah.
All right.
Next week we do have a story on American innovation, Barack Obama, and Eric Holder, and illegal aliens and voter ID. So that's coming up next week.
Cool. Well, look forward to it. All right, Nick. Thanks for joining us tonight. It's been a great show. Pay attention tomorrow to Facebook and Twitter, because that's where I'm going to put it. So the American Hour on Twitter, Facebook, the American Hour radio page, and we just may very well do a live broadcast from a Chick-fil-A and see what people have to say. There's some Chick-fil-A's right around here where I live, so I'm going to go have some dinner there tomorrow night, and you guys can follow along with us. Thanks for joining us tonight. We'll see you hopefully tomorrow night, and if not, we'll see you next week, same time, same bat channel on the American Hour radio show.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks, everybody.
All right, we'll see you next week.
You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.